Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton. Glad you could listen today. During this hour of the show, we'll be talking about home energy, something we do fairly frequently on this show, since it's something that people have to deal with. If you want to get the most comfort and the best efficiency for your energy dollar, this is the kind of show for you. Our guest, we have two guests this morning, Larry Lister, who is our energy efficiency guru. We've sort of appointed him that. He grits his teeth every time I say that. That's all right. He is with Facility Dynamics Engineering, and he is an engineer himself, has done a wide variety of work on both homes and business-type buildings, and he's here to help. And also Carol Timms, who is with Educational Dividends in Champaign-Urbana. She is working on a program called Energize Champaign, which is working to bring more energy efficiency to Champaign buildings in conjunction with an educational effort in the Champaign schools. We'll talk a bit about that and also take your questions. If you'd like to join us, you can call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. If you match the letters with the numbers, that's what you get. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. Larry and Carol, good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Maybe we'll start by asking Carol Timms to talk about Energize Champaign and what you're doing with that.
Energize Champaign is an exciting program. What we're doing is we're working with local students, and we're going to be looking at our historic downtown in Champaign. We're going to be auditing the buildings, looking at ways that the building owners can save money, make their buildings more comfortable. We're going to look at their bills and track their energy use and suggest some ways for them to improve their energy efficiency.
And you're doing this in conjunction with students, young people.
That's right. We have students from Centennial who are working with us through the Education to Careers program, the Academy at Central High School, and we're also working with the Urban League Youth Programs. So we're going to be teaching those students about energy, about how buildings use energy, and they're going to go through and produce a prioritized list for the building owners, telling them where their dollars are best spent.
How do you go about starting the students in the process? I mean, could you describe sort of how it works?
Sure. We're going to be doing some training with educators and engineers from Educational Dividends as well as from DECA, because they're providing funding through Rebuild America for Energize Champaign. DECA is the State Department of Commerce and Community Affairs.
Okay.
And the Energy Bureau has been long supporting energy education throughout the state of Illinois. And they will be working with us as well. And we're going to be showing students how a building uses energy. There's an awful lot of common sense involved in building energy use. And there's a lot of disciplines that are touched on. So we call this reality-based education, if you will. They'll be using their math, science, language arts, technology skills, and working together in teams much as you would in the business world. So they'll be attacking each building and looking at each building from a team perspective. So we'll teach them how a building uses energy, talk about the new technologies, talk about the common sense approaches to reducing air infiltration and things like that. And then they'll be going through and really giving their opinions.
So if someone owns a historic building, for example, in Champaign, they can contact you and, you know, start the process of, you know, sort of doing a site inspection and so forth?
That's right. The Champaign Downtown Association is our sponsor for this, and they will be soliciting buildings who would like to participate. So any building owner or building manager in downtown Champaign can contact the Champaign Downtown Association and schedule an audit. And our students will be through in, about February, we'll be starting our audits.
Is there a cost associated with?
There is no cost for the audit, and an audit is required in order to apply for some of the grant funding that we have through Energize Champaign. So first give us a call, schedule an audit. Our students will give you their ideas of the best ways to spend your money, and then you can talk to the Champaign Downtown Association and get some assistance in investing in your energy efficiency.
Okay, and where would people contact?
They can call 359-9442, and that would be my office, and I can put them in touch with the right folks or get them scheduled for an audit.
Okay, good. Let's talk a bit about the kinds of buildings that we would be focusing on in this. A lot of historic buildings weren't exactly Larry or Carol, tell me if I put my foot in my mouth here. They weren't exactly built with the best principles of energy efficiency.
Not with energy efficiency, no, definitely not. A lot of them structurally are pretty integral. And I find that when I've dealt with historic buildings like the one I live in, you know, a lot of our residential or like that, you really see all kinds of things that are just fabulous construction and engineering. But on the other hand, you'll see things that just, you know, you scratch your head and say, wow, I'm really surprised it is. Blocking is a big issue. And I've seen it in some of the downtown buildings over in Champaign that I've been through, where there's places behind the walls and behind the ceilings and stuff where there's, and you don't see them, but you can tell sort of forensically by looking for cold surfaces or that there's air moving inside the building that shouldn't be there. And sometimes the building might have been built well where they've blocked in things and didn't leave any openings to the outside, you know, some of the substructure stuff. But what will happen is, you know, over the course of time, somebody will have, you know, there'll be an old flue or an old coal chute, and then there'll be a flue from an old boiler that no longer exists going right up through the, you know, through the roof of the building. And sometimes, you know, they'll patch the hole in the roof, but they won't patch the pathway that goes through the building, and it'll allow outside air to come in and flow through the building. And those are the things that are, you have to look for those in trying to do at least an envelope modification, which is to make the building shell tighter. You have to go through and sort of look for these, you know, warning signs, these cold surfaces. And sometimes I've told, you know, talking with kids, I'll say, go down, you know, if you're down in the basement, look for places that go, you know, gaps that go right up through the walls from the basement, and look for cobwebs that are moving, because mm-hmm. that shows that there's a lot of, there's flow going on. And that, you know, that's a way, I'm sure Carol's used some of these things with the kids. It's a really a way to make it a little bit of an investigative drill, and,
right.
and it can be kind of fun. The other thing, when you were talking with Carol, that I wanted to mention was that I've done a little bit of work with children when I was doing my Department of Defense work. And the one nice thing about doing this kind of thing is that the kids, not only once they're engaged in that thought process, they carry it with them not just home to their parents and start nagging their parents about, yeah, you got to close the windows. But also just through their lives, you know, once you touch on this idea of energy savings, and especially if it can be tied into some environmental things to get to the emotional part of it, then, you know, they really become kind of ambassadors. And even mm-hmm. if they don't go into the area, at least they've got that with them. So these programs are just really exciting for me to hear about. And I'm really glad that there's something locally going on.
It's a great way, too, to make the point to students that what they're learning in school is really truly relevant mm-hmm. to their lives and to the world. And that's when they begin to understand that they not only need to learn, but they want to learn. And that excites them quite a bit. You know, one thing I would mention about the Champaign buildings that I think is really interesting, up until about 40 years ago, all of the downtown Champaign buildings were heated with steam heat from Illinois Power's generating station. So it wasn't until 40 years ago that those buildings even put in their own system. So our students are going to get to see not only the district heating steam tunnel issue, but they're going to see some very, very old boilers. And we have buildings with those 40-year-old systems that are now desperately in need of some changes. So it's a nice environment for them to work in.
And when they built a lot of those buildings, because they knew that there was going to be district systems, a lot of older buildings in general that are on district heat, they really didn't go at great pains to make the envelopes nice and tight, because there was a lot of concern. Even then, there was concern about indoor air quality, especially mm-hmm. And on the systems where they had their own boilers, like coal-fired boilers in a building, I've heard stories from some of the dead men, you know, the older engineers that did this stuff, who are no longer around, that they, you know, there would be coal dust and things, and so they would actually keep these buildings drafty a little bit on purpose, or you know, a product of combustion residue that may wind up in the building. So a lot of times, I read some of these historic things, and they say, well, you have to leave all this, you have to leave all these big gaps to keep the air, keep the building from getting smelly and stuff. Well, we don't have that problem anymore.
Yeah. Well, they were engineers. They realized what was happening, I'm sure.
To some degree,
It's also really interesting, the whole concept of this district, the steam system that was used at that point. And I didn't realize it until a few years ago. There was some renovation going on in some of the older buildings in Champaign. And suddenly, somebody discovered the sidewalk was collapsing into one of these steam tunnels that apparently had been totally forgotten about.
Right. And district heating, while used quite a bit many years ago, is something that really isn't used very much now. And so it's a new concept. People hear about that and go, oh, my goodness, well, that's one way to do it.
The U of I has used that system.
Oh, yeah. And pretty effectively. Mm-hmm. A lot of older district heating systems are really expensive to renovate. They take a lot of capital to go in and renovate one. But surprisingly, a lot of cities are doing district cooling now. Not just in the Banana Belt, around the southern part of the United States, but all over. Chicago is putting in a big district cooling system. The University of Illinois is building one right now. That's why our streets are torn up. Because cooling is getting to be more and more of an issue in our buildings, where we put more load in our buildings. We've got a lot of buildings, even in Chicago, that never have to be heated. That are cooled, 20 below. It's still, the chillers are still going in some of these big buildings. So they're putting more and more district cooling systems in. And it is an efficient way to do it centrally, but you really have to kind of mind your engineering principles when you do it, or else it can be a pretty expensive thing.
We're talking this morning about home energy and energy in general, energy efficiency, comfort, etc. Our guests are Larry Lister, a engineer with Facility Dynamics Engineering, and Carol Timms with Educational Dividends. She works in the area of energy education, has done a variety of consulting on energy issues for the state of Illinois, and now working with the Downtown Champaign Partnership. It's a little, Downtown Champaign
Association.
Thank you. Several organizations involved in this. Anyway, we would welcome your questions. We had one person who was on a car phone. I think they probably had to hang up because of, navigational issues. But if you'd like to join us, you can call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455.
One thing that I really want to stress about this project, and I think that parents who may be home and listening, this is especially appropriate. We really challenge the students who we work with, and we say, you need to find the answers. You need to go out and work together as a team and really begin to do your research. And that's something that I don't think we do enough for our children, is challenge them. Often, and I think that you're hearing this now, parents, as children are home on break, school is boring. I don't need to learn that. Well, when you hear that math is boring from a student who 10 minutes later is able to come up with every statistic in the world on some baseball player, you know that they're not being challenged. And that's an important part of what will happen with Energize Champaign.
Right. Well, they're using the knowledge for a real-world sort of activity.
Exactly.
Yeah. We have a caller to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation. Someone in Champaign on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, I was wondering about what kind of careers students might become interested in, and whether those careers will be there for them in the future.
That's a very good question. There are over 35 degreed careers in energy, related to energy, that a student might choose from. In addition, there are all of the trades that each have their own energy bent to them. So when a student learns about energy, it opens up a lot of options for them that they may not realize is available to them. We also use a lot of technology in this project, and so certainly we know how interested and capable students are with technology. They're going to find a lot of opportunities, and it will be up to them to determine what best fits their needs and where their interests are. But yes, those careers will certainly be available in the future. Energy is something that's incredibly important to our society and our economy.
You know, Carol mentions the trades, and that's one thing that tends to get, I think, a lot of short shrift these days, is that, you know, there's the obvious engineers, you know, go to college for 4 years or 8 years or, in my case, more, and go out and be an engineer and do this and that. And that's great, and we need engineers, but there's really, because of the technical nature of things these days, commercial buildings in general, the control systems, which is the area I tend to focus on, there's really a need for technically competent people who don't need an engineering degree. You don't have to send your kid to college for 4 years. But, you know, there is some training. Technical college, you know, two-year technical colleges will give you good help. Just being computer literate is a huge step in the right direction. If your children are messing with computers and messing with programming and even just playing video games, try to push them off into a little bit of the programming kind of thing. You know, not all of us have kids that are college bound and that are motivated to go to college, but that want good paying jobs, want a job that will last into the future. And areas like the controls industry is a big issue. They need people who are computer literate, who want to understand. You'll learn the basics in the trade while you're working. You'll learn all the basic heating, ventilating, cooling systems. But there's really just a shortage of these folks out there. And it's really impacting what I as an engineer can do, and I'm sure what Carol as an educator, an advocate can do. So that's one thing that the trades are not to be overlooked in this day and age. I think it's a...
And our students who are especially curious are the kind of students that we really want to direct towards the trades, because if you look at the need to continually learn and the need to continually keep up with the technology, that's something that's so very important with our tradespeople. When you are designing or building a structure, you need to know what the newest thoughts are out there to make that structure energy efficient, and you have to be able to constantly keep up and really be clever about how you can build something so that it is affordable to operate and to maintain.
We have another call to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation. This is another listener in Champaign on line number 2. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Would you care to comment on the unpopular subject of the loss of energy through excessive Christmas decorations?
A timely question. Anyone want to dive into that?
Ooh. Wow.
How about the cost?
The cost? It depends on first of all, what you would call excessive. Being a little bit nerdy, I metered my Christmas tree 1 year, I'll admit
you
it. Yes. That was a while ago. I'm trying to remember how much it was. My take on it was that, yes, we don't need to have Christmas lights. And I feel a little tinge when I drive down, you know, Candlestick Lane and the place is just so lit up, although it's still fun to take the kids over there. But in general, talking about a Christmas tree, for example, it was on the order of a couple dollars for the entire Christmas season.
Yeah.
If that.
I think, too, it's each person's choice, and then you get into the decision process, which is something that's very important for all of us to pay attention to. What are your priorities? What do you care most about? And make your decision based on some very logical assumptions. And there are a lot of ways to decorate without electricity, and then there are some wonderful, beautiful ways to decorate with it.
Yeah.
And Christmas tree lights, too. One thing is that it looks, you know, when you spread a little bit of light over a large area, it can actually look like a bigger energy dump than what's actually occurring. Some of these lights are pretty pretty small from a wattage perspective.
Well, I have noticed that in recent years there are more and more of these external house lights that mm-hmm. are very beautiful. I mean, you drive down the street. It's not like Candlestick Lane or anything in mm-hmm. Urbana. If people are in the area, they're familiar with that probably. But more and more people seem to enjoy, you know, decorating their houses for Christmas. And, you know, it's one of those trade-offs, I suppose. It's a, you know, lifestyle choice. What are you going to do? You can just, you know...
Yeah, you know, and
not do any decoration at all. It'd be the alternative, I suppose.
Yeah, you know, two or three days ago when it was so cold, it's a great time to go find the leaks in your house because, boy, they just hit you right in the face. And I found about a 1 square foot opening in my own house. Mm-hmm. I haven't been there that long, but I found an opening I didn't know about hidden away somewhere that you know, I would say that I can see the caller's perspective. There's usually so many other places where we're wasting energy and electricity and comfort that I would really prefer people to go, you know, look at those things. A lot of people leave porch lights on and things like that mm-hmm. fairly indiscriminately, and that can be that can be your Christmas tree right there.
Our lines are all full suddenly. Maybe the Christmas tree's got people going here. We'll find out. We'll go next to a listener on a cell phone on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have an inquiry regarding Carrier new. I don't know if it's more than a marketing effort, but they seem to be packaging their company more as a service provider rather than the provider of, you know, of heating and air conditioning units as a potential source to go and make a broader, more comprehensive analysis of your they have a buzzword for it, sort of in residential environmental needs. Are you familiar with that said program?
Yes, I mean not their program specifically, but the trend in the HVAC original equipment people is toward that, and it's at the commercial level primarily, although it's more and more at the residential level too. Is that it's kind of the deregulation sort of the utility industry spun off into the HVAC manufacturers. What they're wanting to do is to come in and look at all of the different things and provide. I mean, really, they're going to sell you an air conditioner. And
well, but does that mean that they also in their pocket are they have relationships with other businesses such as let's say window manufacturers and so forth and so on? It doesn't necessarily suggest that their advice is any more credible than any sort of individual collection of people that you might bring in. You know, what I'm driving at is it seems like the problem that folks have of finding sources that are credible sources that don't have vested interests, that can make an analysis based on cost over time and decide, you know, at what point is it worth doing window replacement or replacing furnaces, or, you know, as you're tormented by the notion of higher utility bills versus, you know, environmental issues. I mean, is there a better database to go to than calling on private industry to come in and do those analyses?
There is, in theory. I mean, there's things like this radio show where we talk about that. Could I make a living doing that? No, I don't. I do this more for fun and as a hobby, talking about residential things, because people don't have the kind of money it takes to sustain an engineer, frankly, and shouldn't have to. So, what I see these providers, there's a number of names for what they're doing. They're also, by the way, and this isn't Carrier, but there's some others that are going around and buying up a lot of mom and pop businesses all over the United States, and these, they call them aggregators, and they go around And there's a, you know, large company in Houston that is going around and has bought up. There's somebody in town that's affiliated with them. It's not to say it's bad. It's just sort of the way of the world and the way of the business side of it. And it really comes down to the individual. You know, if you had somebody from Carrier come in, you might get somebody that would give you the same advice that Carol or I would.
Right.
And they might say, you know what, you don't need a new air conditioner. You need to get these ducts fixed up, and they might actually be able to do that, or not. Or they might say, you know what, you really need to look at some of your, you get some problems down around the foundation and the sill plate, and you have these holes going outside. So it comes, like anything in this world, it really comes down to the individual. But you're right in having that questioned look about it. And as long as you're aware of who it is giving you the advice, you might want to get a second opinion.
Right. Well, I know that in this program that this question may seem more suitable for like Hank Spees, who's regularly a guest. But it empowers individuals like Spees to an absurd level because people are so, I think at the consumer side that I could safely say that people are so interested in this kind of information that, you know, when a Spees comes along suddenly, there's a tendency to maybe what Spees says goes and which oftentimes is great advice, but you know, you don't have anything to measure it against.
Right.
No consumer confidence in a lot of the actual providers of those services.
So. One of the things that I might suggest to you, the Department of Energy has an awful lot of helpful publications that deal with residential. And there's a publication that's simply called Energy Savers. And you might want to get a copy of that because energy efficiency in your home really does have a lot to do with common sense and looking at the systems. And as we work with the students, we push the four areas that you look at in your home. And so I would suggest that you get a publication like that, and it will help you make some of your decisions. And I have a phone number for you.
Oh, all right. Is that an on-air phone number?
Yes, I have an 800 number to get that publication. If you call 800-363-3732, you'll be able to receive that free publication, and I think that is a good start in looking at what you can do in your own home.
All right, I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, very much.
The other pots, I get this question a lot also, and there's a Lawrence Berkeley Labs and Home Energy Magazine has a really good site that's, and actually I think that the website has just changed, but they have a place that you can go and answer some questions, and it's as good as you're going to get from somebody not being there in your house taking a look, and it gives you some really good advice of kind of where to point the guns financially. And I don't have the link right off the top of my head. It used to be homeenergysaver.lbl.gov, but there was no www in front of it. Mm. What we might be able to do, though, is I might be able to – WILL has an incredibly great website, this station, and if anybody's been to that, we might be able to convince the person in charge of that website. We could throw some energy links or something in there because I get these calls constantly, yeah. And I wish I had somewhere to point them to.
Well, I'll talk to the webmaster about that.
You should do that, Jack.
Sure we can, yeah, since that's me, it shouldn't be a problem. We can post on our website. We'll post this program in real audio, and we can put some more links on there as well on the Focus 580 page. So that's great. Our lines are almost full. We'll go on and talk with some more callers. Next up, someone in Fisher on line number two. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, I have a couple of questions, please. I have a natural gas water heater that needs to be replaced, and I'm just beginning to think for the first time that maybe I need to switch to an electric water heater. And my second question is, our air conditioning ducts in our crawl space of our home are not insulated. Is this some project that could save us lots of energy if we were to insulate them by wrapping them?
No and yes.
Okay, no
I'll
and
answer that so fast.
Well, that's good.
I'll see if Carol agrees with me on
this.
No
and yes.
I've kind of said this before, and it's a friend of mine has made the – I'm quoting a friend of mine. He said, using electricity to heat water is like using bottled water to water your lawn. You know, it works, but why you would want to do that? Mm-hmm. The electric providers will tease you with some tantalizingly low electric rates to do that. And so you're right for being kind of caught up by that hook if that's part of what did it. But I would say no. If you've got natural gas and you need to replace your natural gas water heater, there's some really nice, efficient ways to do it. I know natural gas is feeling kind of expensive right now, but 3 or 4 years down the road, and it may not be cheaper, but electricity is just from a resource perspective, it's really not. It's you know.
And when you get that new natural gas water heater, be sure to wrap it.
Okay.
And also, some of the newer water heaters will side vent, and, mm-hmm. and the efficiencies yeah. are a lot better. And a lot of times you can get away from using the chimney, which at some point closing up chimneys, as we don't need them, as we get newer appliances that don't really require the chimney, that's actually often a really strange energy loss place from a heating perspective. We lose a lot of heat and cooling through these drafty old chimneys in our house, depending on how old your house is.
I was going to say, if it's inside the house, the water heater is still safe to use without the van if it's made specifically for a side vent?
Oh, right. It has to be made specifically. There'll be a little induced draft fan or something that goes with that, and they'll duct it, usually ducted with PVC pipe, and they'll duct that out, and they'll just kind of spray the what little exhaust there is. Mm-hmm. Natural gas is a pretty clean-burning fuel. Yeah.
And as far as our air conditioning ducts now, how do we insulate them?
The first thing that I would do on that is to seal them before you insulate. Are they sheet metal or flexible duct?
They're sheet metal.
Great. You would want to get somebody, and you can probably, depending on who you have available to do this, it's something you could do it yourself or can do, but you could also hire somebody. You want to use a duct mastic. You don't want to use duct tape.
Right.
No tape of any kind. It just won't last. But there's a mastic that can be applied that's got some structural integrity. It hardens. It becomes just like the duct itself. You want to seal that ductwork because we lose so much energy through ductwork.
Right.
And through poorly designed but usually just falling apart ductwork. We spend a lot of money to make cooling and to make heat at the plant in your house, at the furnace or air conditioner, only to dump half of it before it gets to where it's going.
So the best people to ask to do that are people that do install air conditioning?
Right. The people, anybody in the HVAC trades could do that here locally, and you want to, but you really want to make sure you don't get, because there are people that are still going around throwing duct tape around ducts, so you really want to avoid that. Then go ahead and insulate, and if it's in the crawl space, fiberglass or anything would do, and they can usually do that at about the same time.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, and good luck. So can we say that duct tape is good for just about everything else but ducts?
Duct tape is great for, everything else. Rock and roll tape.
Okay, good. We have a couple callers. We're past our midpoint here. We're talking about home energy and energy use in general, how to get the most out of it. Our guests are Carol Timms, she is with Educational Dividends, and Larry Lister with Facility Dynamics Engineering. A couple callers waiting, and we'd welcome others in the time remaining. 333-9455 or toll-free 800-222-9455. Next up, a listener in Urbana on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning.
Yes.
I would like to know about the virtues of blown-in cellulose insulation. I got a rickety old tract house of mid-60s vintage that the attic spaces aren't anywhere near as well insulated as they could be, and that's one of the projects I have to get done here in the next week or so is to improve that. I've heard that, or read that cellulose insulation has a air infiltration reducing quality about that, and I was wondering if you could comment upon that and if perhaps you could recommend any particular brands of cellulose insulation that are better than another. Thank you.
Well, we certainly agree that insulation is virtuous, so you have a good project on your hands. As far as recommending brands, what are you?
Well, shredded up newspaper, shredded up newspaper. it really.
I like the Tribune really, myself.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of things that you should be looking at when you're doing. You mentioned the attic. So if you're doing the attic, from an air infiltration perspective, cellulose can really reduce it. And you're right to go after air infiltration because people think because insulation is there, it's insulating. And it's only insulating if there's not air blowing through it. And unfortunately, a lot of applications where we insulate, we don't take care of the pressure problem that's caused by all the different forces that go on in the house and by the weather and by the temperature in your house against the outside air. And we put these pressure differences on our houses, and they suck and blow outside air in and out. And insulation gets defeated by that, and it becomes nothing but a filter. unless you stop those places. If you're doing your attic and you're blowing in cellulose and it's just going to lay there, it's going to have really no air infiltration effect, because there's nothing impeding it, the air from blowing that insulation around. You may want to consider, I mean, it's a decent insulator if there is no air blowing, and so I'm not telling you not to do it. You really just need to look a little closer at what else is going on. Where I have mentioned in the past that there is a really good air infiltration barrier effect of cellulose is when you blow it into walls, enclosed walls specifically. And it has to be applied in a way so as to put it in under fairly high pressure, higher pressure than just dumping it into the wall using the big vacuum kind of looking machines that they have. If you use a blow tube and you stick it, you run the tube up into the wall, you fill the cavity, and then you pressurize it and really pack it good. That's one way of going after an old house that has a lot of these holes and things that we talk about. That's one way of getting at those things and really tightening up old houses. I've done a little bit of that as a homeowner. It's kind of difficult to find anybody locally that knows how to do it. It's called dense pack cellulose is kind of the name that they've given that application method. But there are ways to do it, and I would recommend using that as a way to solve your infiltration. If you can get fiberglass in the attic, you might be a little better off doing that. It'll just stay in place a little better, and it's not so bad to work with either.
Good. Hope that gets to the caller's question. We have several people waiting. We'll go next to a listener in Oak Forest on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes. I was told about, and I was just looking at the web on it this morning, about the Bosch AquaStar. And it's the tankless water heater, and I was wondering what you know about it.
Tankless water heater.
Yeah.
It's a tankless job.
That's the
tankless water heater.
Okay.
Sorry. The tankless water, I don't have a lot of firsthand experience with tankless water heaters. Although I'm actually on a job right now, I've got to look at them. So maybe in a month or two, I'll know more.
Note that question down, Larry.
Yeah. I actually have a question from the last thing I'm supposed to answer too. But,
in on the website controlledenergy.com, and it's a Bosch AquaStar. They make it for residential, and then they do commercial. Thanks to Bosch AquaStar tankless gas water heaters, provide an endless supply of hot water and save money by using energy only when you're using hot water, and you never run out of hot water either.
So it heats the water.
It heats the water as you use it.
Mm-hmm. And it's electric or gas?
Gas.
It's gas.
What does the rating on it say? How does the rating compare to other water heaters?
Oh, much more efficient. If you go in on the website, you'll find a ton about the energy, but I was just wondering if you knew anybody who had one. I heard about them on the radio on a Mr. Fix-It type show on WGN, and I know Bosch is a wonderful brand because I hear their dishwasher, which is extremely energy efficient and extremely quiet. So when you go home today or back to the office, look it up and we'll talk to you again.
Well, on The earlier tankless water heaters, I did have some experience with these back in around the 1990 time frame, and they were awful. The military installed a lot of them. Now, this isn't to say anything about this particular brand. In general, it was a technology to stay away from. I wouldn't carry that same thought forward without having more knowledge about it right now, only because things do change, and they usually change for the better.
Yeah.
The big question is throughput on a tankless water heater. Is typically where I see them used in the commercial sector is where you don't need a lot of hot water, like for hand washing, where the gallons per minute is fairly low, and usually you don't need a high temperature. So that's usually where you'd use them, because you really – if you think about it, you're trying to heat 55-degree groundwater to 110, 120, whatever you might be using at your faucet. The the temperature. It's really pretty. It's not hard to calculate. For at least an engineer would calculate that and say, okay, here's the kind of heating that we need to do that. So to instantaneously do it, what I've heard a lot of is that if you're doing showers, bathtubs, things like that, it can be pretty rough.
Okay.
Where you're looking for a lot of water in a short period of time, they can be pretty. They may not do it. So you really need to look at the throughput numbers, the GPM.
Let me ask you a quick follow-up, and then we'll get on because we have several callers and we're going to run out of time. What if you have a system like that in conjunction with, say, a passive solar system that sort of preheats your water to, at least room temperature or higher, and then you wouldn't have to spend so much energy heating it up to whatever you're going to use it at?
Yeah, definitely. That helps if you're not starting off with 55-degree water and you're instead starting off with 80 or 90-degree water. That really makes a difference. The passive solar ways to do that is the batch-type systems where you've got a tank, a dark-colored tank that will absorb radiant heat, and it's somehow insulated, or in a glass. There's definitely ways to do that. That tends to be, in our climate, that's a seasonal thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't use that in the winter. And find also that you tend to want more hot water in the winter. So there's a little bit of a just a design discrepancy going on there. But that would be a good way to get more capacity out of those. Really, when you look at the tankless thing, you just need to look at what temperature you want to set it at and how many gallons per minute they can deliver. And it's really a heat exchanger is what they're talking about, just like in your furnace. And you should be able to see what's going on there, and then just look at how your life. It really is a lifestyle thing.
Yeah.
If you got some teenagers and you got three people wanting to run a shower at the same time, just add up those gallons per minute that you need and see if the unit will handle it.
Very good. We have three people waiting. Let's get on to our next caller. This is someone in rural St. Joe on line two. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello.
Yes.
I was calling to ask about the difference between fiberglass ductwork and regular metal ductwork. And I was also going to ask about the efficiency of propane versus electricity for a dryer, for a clothes dryer. And also the last question was to ask about, I know that you're working with college students, but have you considered working at the grade school level also?
Actually, we're not working with college students. We're working with, in Champaign, we're working with high school students. Throughout the state of Illinois, we're working with students in grades 6 through 12.
And sixth grade would be the lowest grade that you go to?
For the energy auditing program that we do, sixth grade is the lowest because of math skills required. We also have a program called Energy Detectives that is for grades 3 through 5, and then another program in the Chicago area that is a K-12 program. So energy education is very applicable to grades K through 12 and above. But this is a program in Champaign. We're working with our high school students.
Thank you.
Okay. And the other question was it fiberglass versus?
Fiberglass versus sheet metal. I hate fiberglass duct work. You're going to have a hard time finding anybody to people can do sheet metal. It's really expensive. There's a lot of benefits to it. It uses less energy. There's less pressure drop with it. It can be cleaned. It can be sealed well. It lasts forever. The fiberboard ductwork, there's some questions about whether there's a little bit of health issues with that, with entrainment of fiberglass. However, the latest I've heard on that is that it's really a pretty minimal thing. So that issue I wouldn't argue with too much. Mostly the problem I have with fiberboard ductwork is that it just doesn't – it's not going to last – your house is going to last 100 years. The fiberboard ductwork is not. So something's gonna give.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I hope that gets your questions.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll try to squeeze in another caller or two, go next to someone in Urbana on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have an older house that I'm working with, and – it has no insulation in the walls. It also has knob and tube wiring. I understand that knob and tube needs airspace between it, and if I blow in insulation, I'll be losing that, and I wonder what you know about that.
Anyone want to tackle that?
If not, knob and tube is
sure.
What you'll find in most old houses that haven't been rewired.
Right. It's kind of scary sometimes.
Well, it's actually fairly safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, knob and tube is not something that you have to, you know, run away from just for the sake. And again, it comes down to how well it was applied.
Yeah.
If you can get at it to change it, you know, go ahead and do so. On that though, you know, I've seen things on both sides. From an engineering perspective, there's no reason that it would need any air.
Mm-hmm.
What does happen, though, and I've heard of this in a lot of residential energy programs and state energy programs, is that this happened. I read something in Minnesota where they were paying somebody to come in and blow insulation into the wall spaces. There was a lot of knob and tube jobs there. And because of the way they do some of the junctions on the knob and tube, where they just kind of scrape off some insulation and wrap another conductor around it and take off toward another light, what happens is that when applying the cellulose, particularly under pressure, they were blowing some of those poorly and, you know, 100-year-old
blowing them apart.
Junctions. Yeah, they were blowing them apart, and then, you know, you get all kinds of problems that way. So it really kind of comes down to the integrity of the job.
If an electrician says it's pretty solid wiring, that it wouldn't necessarily be a problem to have insulation put in the walls then.
Yeah, I actually, a house I lived in prior to the one I'm in now, I went to insulate and found out that, I mean, I knew there was knob and tube in there. It was a pretty good knob and tube job. Mm-hmm. However, I found out that by opening these cavities up, I was able to get at some of them from the basement. They were open to the basement. I had to seal that prior to blowing the insulation. But what I was able to do is I was able to feed a lot of new wiring up with very little extra degree of difficulty.
Okay.
So I was able to actually kind of get rid of a lot of the knob and tube and avoid that potential problem.
Okay. And with crawl space insulation, the termite inspectors are saying don't do it, but everything I read says you need insulation down there. Do you have any thoughts on that also?
Yeah, where you insulate the crawl space kind of depends on some of the particulars. I'm probably not going to have time to go into it, whether you do the perimeter or the.
Well, how about band joists? They don't like fiberglass on that.
Oh, yeah. They're not paying your utility bills and feeling your cold floors with their bare feet either. You know, I don't think there's much of an issue. If termites are there, they're going to be there. And all it's going to do is keep you from seeing it a little bit sooner, so.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Well, I'm afraid to say we're out of time, and we've got one caller that we couldn't take, and I apologize to that person. But we will certainly do this program again. And just wanted to give Carol Timms an opportunity to give out any contact information if people want to check out Energize Champaign or some of the other programs going around in the state that are associated with it.
Right. You can visit the Educational Dividends website at www.educationaldividends.com. There you'll find information on the various programs. There's help for parents who are interested in working with their students as they work through their educational career. There's assistance for teachers who are interested in the new teaching techniques that we're promoting. And there's information for business as well. Energize Champaign will be happening this year through the end of next year, next spring, so spring of 2002. And we'll be any business downtown who's interested in an audit should please call us at 359-9442 and ask any questions you may have.
Very good. Well, thanks for being here. And also just to mention that Larry Lister mentioned a website earlier that you could get some information on how to go about improving your home energy efficiency. And while we don't have that off the top of our heads, I'll make sure to post that on the WILL website on the Focus 580 page, where people can also find this program in real audio in a day or two, as soon as we can get that done. So both of you, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.